Okay.
This crowd seems a little smaller. Again, we have the vacuums. What is it about this time of the day?
Hand dryer.
What's a hand dryer? Oh, is that? It's the bathroom. Oh, the bathroom door is open. It's the hand dryers. Okay. Anyway, so first off, assignment one, I believe I have posted on CU Learn for you to submit. If it doesn't work, let me know. I think I set the arguments right, but they've changed some stuff around and I might have messed it up. So, check. What? Yes, exactly. Yeah, this assignment, same one, do October 3rd, upload it there. My plan today is to talk about more about functions in JavaScript, the different invocation patterns for functions in JavaScript. So this is the functions chapter from JavaScript, the good parts. So I want this is what I want to spend my time talking about today. Hopefully get that clear in your own minds. And talk about some of the annoyances of JavaScript. I am also willing to field other questions that may have come up while you were doing your assignment. Let me know. Otherwise, I will just get started here. And I do have chalk, yes. So.
How loud is the bathroom door open?
Yes?
I'm having problems figuring out how it all fits together. So, like, if I want to display an array to the screen, I pass the array to J.
So when you say you want to display a page, so you're talking about you're in Node, the client has requested something, and now you have an array on Node, and you want to pass it back to the client as part of a web page.
Yeah, that's like it, I would say it's a list of people to put in the
Node. Right, exactly. Yeah.
So where do I actually code the logic for that?
So there's two parts. Yeah. One is you have to have the data, and the other is you have to create the HTML that will show the data.
But does the loop iterate in J?
Yes. Because the actual way you would do it logically in HTML is you would have, let's say there were five names. You know, five names with their content. You would have five blocks of text with the five names. And so your web page doesn't have a loop in it. When it gets to the browser, it doesn't have a loop in it. It just has five blocks. But how are you going to generate that page on the server side? You have to have a looping constant that will generate that page. Mm-hmm. Now you could loop in Node, in the JavaScript Node there, but if you loop there, that's just going to allow you to create multiple pages. What you want to do is all in one page, you want to create repeated elements. So what you're basically talking about the template. Now, what you could do is have some sort of you could keep around like multiple templates. Like you would keep around 10 templates for up from 1 to 10 addresses. And you could choose based on the size of the array. You could use template 1 or template 2 or template 3 or something. Yeah. But that's bleh.
So I'm supposed to be passing the array to Jade.
Right. And Jade is supposed to iterate through it and create a page with multiple entries. Yes. That's exactly what it is. So, yeah, if you look in Jade, there is support for for loops. The syntax is basically like a C loop, but basically you do indentation, you start with a dash or something. There are examples, and you play with it, and you should be able to get it to work. If you have specific problems with the syntax or something, talk to a TA or me, send me your examples, and we can try helping you figure out what's... best thing to do is come to office hours. You shouldn't be generating much code for this assignment. Should be pretty small. The TAs have worked through the solutions and it came out quite small. So now you might notice I'm not sitting here and saying, here is this construct. Here is this construct. I am, when you're asking, I'm telling you this, but I'm giving you access to the resources, I'm giving you the overall conceptual framework, but when you're actually doing the detail work, you're probably going to have to refer to various resources. And that's the way it's supposed to be. I don't want to lead you through this by the nose. Because if that's what you have to do in order to build a web application, you can't build a web application. You're going to have to be reading and figuring things out as you go. You want to do something new, you're going to have to look it up, look at Stack Exchange and look for examples. You're going to look in the various postings and stuff. I mean, this is how web development happens. You have to use the resources because the tools change. I mean, I'm teaching you Node now, and it's going to be something else later. But I'll tell you, the concepts of what we're talking about will still be there. JavaScript in particular will probably still be around for a good while. But even if JavaScript goes away, the concepts underlying it will definitely be there. And this whole notion of using templates to generate web pages and having the rendering engine in the web browser and the separation between the client and server and stuff, that this is all more fundamental. This has been true since the very beginning of the web. And this goes back to much older in computer science. So, make sense?
Yeah, I'm just tired of seeing error 500.
Error 5, oh, okay.
Well, one of the things we're I'm going to have in this next tutorial is debugging techniques. That's the plan for the Friday tutorial. Because I figure having a few little tools, like playing with the web browser can tell you a lot and stuff. And also there's Node debuggers. So, does that sound interesting for everyone? Now you run up against it, you say, I would like better debugging techniques, please. Okay.
Other questions have come up in doing the assignment?
So, today we're talking about functions. Functions in JavaScript. As I told you, functions in JavaScript are a very important thing. They're the basic unit of scoping. They're first class data types. You can pass them around, generate them on the fly. Lots of neat things. So, but one funny thing about functions in JavaScript is they have multiple personalities based depending on how you call them. And what changes is actually one binding, which is called this. I think I was earlier talking about self. No, it's not self in JavaScript. It's this. So when you want to refer to the object that you're currently accessing inside of a method, you refer to this dot whatever, and that is the object. But depending upon how the function is called, because when we say a method, what we're really talking about is the method invocation pattern of a function. So there's four invocation patterns for functions. There's the method in JavaScript. There's the function. There's a constructor. And there's apply. The only thing that differs between these is in the binding of this. So the method invocation pattern, so you have object.method and args. That's the simplest. You've got an object, property, there's a function assigned to a property of the object. You call that function with arguments in this using this kind of syntax. What is the inside of this function, inside of this method, what's the value of this? In this context. This. If you call an object, the obj.method and arguments, inside of that function, method, this will be equal to object, obj. This will be the same. So if you want to refer to the object for which this is being called as a method, you can access it. Because, of course, if you're a method of an object, if you can't access the object, kind of defeats the purpose. How you do your data encapsulation. So this pattern works the way you expect.
But the bizarre thing about JavaScript is you can, so this particular function here, I can do this, say, like, I can say m equals obj.method.
That's a perfectly reasonable assignment, right?
You can assign, you know, symbols to anything. So now m equals this. Now if I say m of args, say exactly the same as this, but I've just done this assignment in between. What's the value of this inside of the function? Anyone know? What?
The object obj?
No. In fact, it's really bad. What it's bound to is the global object. How you called the function completely changes its meaning. Because when you have m like, when you call, do this assignment and then call it here, there is no connection to obj anymore. It's just a freestanding function. Yeah, depending on how it's defined, maybe it has access to special some parts of obj or something like that. But fundamentally, it's a freestanding function. This is the function invocation pattern here. And because there is no object notated here, JavaScript doesn't know what... I mean, and in fact, this method could be a... The same function could act as a method for many different objects. Remember, there's no classes. And so, if you didn't tell it what object, JavaScript says, I don't know what object. So I'll assign the global object. It would have been nice if it set it to null, or something, you know, like, or the empty object, or something that you could tell that, you know, there wasn't an obvious object context. But no, it assigns that to the global object. So, it's a glitch. It's not a sane way to do this. It's a really dumb way to do it. But that's JavaScript. But then there's these two other ones. The constructor invocation pattern, all you do is you say, well, I'll say x equals, let's do this over here. So we've done this m equals object method. So we can just say new m. So this is the same as this. I mean, I could say x equals, so I'll get back whatever the result is here. So instead of saying m of args, I'm saying new m of args. Turns out these two are exactly the same except for one thing. What's the value of this? Any thoughts on what this is associated with now?
The empty object.
In this case, this exactly the same. Now, this should tell you something's a little bit funny here. Because you're going to use the same method here in all these different contexts. What happens if you forget to use new for a constructor? So what is this term? If I eliminate this keyword, I just forget to put it in. I say m equals, you know, x equals this.
This is the global object instead of the empty object.
Instead of the empty object, it's the global object. So if your function doesn't check to see that you actually have an empty object when you're running the constructor, it will just happily start modifying the global object and add things to it. Do you think that does what you want it to do? Almost never. And notice the mistake is on the part of the caller. You can call a constructor and have it be completely messed up. This is such a bad pattern. People go to significant lengths to avoid doing to change how you use new. Basically, there's two ways to keep yourself out of trouble. One is, any function that is meant to be called with new should start with an uppercase letter. So you know, and nothing else should start with an uppercase letter in terms of functions. So you have a constructor here. You wouldn't call M. You'd say, no, it should be, you make it capital M. This is a convention. But it's saying that whenever you have a constructor, you always capitalize the first letter so that you know that it has to go with new. So if you're looking at the code and you see a function being called without the new keyword in front of it, you know you've messed something up. And in fact, there are even checkers of JavaScript that check to make sure your functions that have a first letter that's uppercase are called with new first. That's the first thing. The other thing is, don't use new at all. Just avoid it. You might say, wait, I want to do a constructor. Don't I need new? You don't need new. You just need to start with an empty object and return it. This, all the work that this new did was to assign this to an empty object. Why not just use another symbol and assign it to the empty object? In fact, why don't you just call that? Instead of this, use that. Say that equals an empty object, and then build onto that. And in fact, that's what people do. If you look at a lot of APIs and stuff, a lot of them in JavaScript will never want you to use new. They'll start with a lowercase letter. You don't use new. You just call them, and they will return a new object. They will be a constructor. This syntax really is not needed, but you should know what it means because it is used. Again, part of the didn't think that through fully. Of course, the real reason they put stuff in like this is they wanted to make folks from like C++ come to this language and be comfortable. See, we're object-oriented. We have a new way of calling it. So, bad idea. So how I told you all this about what a method, a function, a constructor is, what's apply? With a method thing, you set it to the this gets set to the object that was, for which this is a method of. For the function invocation, it gets set to the global object. For the constructor pattern, it gets set to the empty object. So for apply, it gets set to whatever you want. That's what it's for. It's for when you want to call the method of one object on another object, for which it's not a method. It lets you pretend like any function is the method of any object. So all you would do here is you would say m.apply. I get the syntax of apply, because I never use apply. Okay. Where is it? That's a constructor. No, that's function. Sorry, one second. Yes. Here we go. All right.
Okay, so what you do is you say apply, and then you have this value, and then so remember how arguments get set to, when you're inside of a function, arguments get set to the array of arguments? So here, you just call it with, so whatever value I want to set for this, so like if I wanted to act like constructor, I could just have it be the empty object. And then here, this would be the array of arguments. Instead of listing them out one after the other, I just put them all in an array and just have one identifier here. So this is the arguments array inside of the function. Or if I wanted to have this act like a method of a given object, I could set this to obj. Or I could set it to the global object. Or I could set it to another object. The apply pattern allows you to determine what this should be. Simple enough? Now, would you call this, so when you call a method like this, when you call a method or something in this sort of pattern, is it a public method or a private method? Basically all public. Everything here we've discussed is like the equivalent of public methods in a standard object-oriented language.
Are there private methods in JavaScript?
There are. But not directly. The way you get private methods is by generating them on the fly. It's basically by using closures, by creating a function in a context where no one else has access to it. And you return that.
Even within the same class, only a portion of that.
Well, there is no such thing as a class.
Like within a file page, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, you can isolate it from within a given, yeah.
Right.
Within a page, you can isolate it from everything else. So how would I do that? Okay. So let me start with a function. So that we say there's some code here, let's do some code here. In the last line here, I'll put so I have this function f, and function takes an argument a, and then you have a function g and a function h. They're both defined in there, and then you return h. So what you should see is that if I call
So if I say, x equals f of 1, what is the value of f? Or what is the value of x? X will be the function h. Because, sorry, I'm going to get to the bottom. So I've got function g and function h, and then I return h outside of both of these. So h is a function, it's a value. It's a function. I'm just returning h here. So x is a function here, h. The thing that's special about this now in this context is it has access to certain things in the scope. Which in specific, it has access to a and has access to g. So for example, inside of h, I can call g of 2. Now, once this returns, can anyone access function g? No. No one else can access function g. But h can access function g because it was defined in this lexical scope. So h can see g. In fact, g can see h too because it's inside the same function, remember? It's like all these things are defined at the top. Yes?
So it would be fairly easy to develop a recursion
method? Oh, very easy. Recursion is very simple. Although, one thing you should know about JavaScript is it's not tail recursive. So for those of you who know, it's basically for certain kinds of recursive patterns that are they're very efficient in standard functional languages, they will not be efficient. They will blow up your stack in JavaScript. But regular vanilla recursion will work the same as in anything else. So let me make this a little more clear. So you got this. So I'm saying over here, what this is here is it's a function. So I'm saying var h equals function c. And I'm saying inside this function, I can refer to a. Actually, what I could do here is call, I'll say return a plus So what's this doing here? It's saying, so this, I'm just rewriting this and expanding what will be in here. But now we've got this function h. It takes an argument c. And what it returns is a plus g of c. And let's say g just does a. All g does is returns b plus 3. G, we have H, and we have F. This is a little confusing. It's kind of supposed to be. So, at a top level, when I'm just calling this, what functions, what symbols are defined at the top level of the interpreter? What functions can I access? Can I access, so let's see now, we've got A, B, C, F, G, H, right? I think those are all the things I've defined in here in some form or another. Which of these are visible at the top level? Which are globals? F. That is our only global, right? That's the only thing that anyone else can see. Every other symbol is private. Inside that scope. Oh, sorry, and I forgot also X. X is also global.
Because I've called X over here.
X is global, and F is global. That's it. That's all anyone else can access. Everything else is, in a sense, private.
Nobody can access B and C because they're arguments that are scoped to the function. So that's normal. Only functions can access their own arguments.
So you can't apply G or B?
You can only apply a function that you can get the name of. How do you refer to it?
Yes,
yeah. You could use apply on X. And that's a function you can use apply on it. It won't do much to the functionality here because we're not using this, but you can use apply there. But I'm talking about visibility. See, X is a global variable, F is a global, everything else is private. Now, the function arguments, B and C, are local to those functions. But also, H and G can see each other because they're both defined in the same scope. No one outside of the scope can see G or H, except that we return H. We return the value of H as the value of this function. So X, all of a sudden, turns out to now be a pointer to H.
H is a reference, X is a reference to H. That's how you can get access into this.
But, I can now from the outside call H using the name X. But I can't do anything inside of it. I can't access G. So, in classic object-oriented terminology, it's like X is now a public method. So if I wanted to make this, I could, instead of this being just a top-level function, I could assign it as being a method of some object. And then it'd be like a public method. But G will always be private. No one can access G because I have not exposed it. I have not returned its value.
And then private methods would only be accessible through public methods?
Which is exactly how private methods are supposed to be. Private methods are functions that can only be called by other things, by the public methods, because that's why they're private. They're basically helper functions for working in a specific object. So the weird thing is you would assign X, if you wanted this to be a method, now you'd say X, you would say so I have an object X. I have an object and I want to assign a method X. I'll call this X. Or actually, if I want to call it the same name, I'll call it H. Object.h equals X. Now I'm treating H, I'll have H as a method of object. And if I call H in any context, it will act like a method as I'd expect, but it has access now to this private thing called G. And then F is functioning as a constructor. Except the constructor here is actually constructing the context for the private methods. I haven't done anything for the other context of the object. So this, all the concepts that you know about in classic object-oriented programming, you can implement in JavaScript. But you implement them using certain design patterns. And we'll talk more about those design patterns later, about how you do kind of classic object-oriented design. But it's all more primitive and thus more general. You can do things that you just simply cannot do in a classic object-oriented language. I mean, you're shuffling methods around here, left and right. You're making things private here in this context and then public here. And, oh, this was private now? I'll make it public on the fly. Conditionally public. Based on just returning the appropriate value from a function. That should make your head spin a little bit. a method that was private now is all of a sudden public just because of a code change. Something that wasn't defined now is defined, and then you have part of your other code saying, if this method is defined, do this. If it's not defined, do this.
So when you have something like, when you make x equal f of 1 and you're returning h, the private function, are you in a sense copying what h does and x is a public function that does that, or are you just
So what does this assignment, what you're really asking is what does this assignment do?
Yes.
So by the way, I've allocated this class for talking about these issues because I'm guessing most of you are confused. It's just the nature of this. I know it's confusing. In some ways, I feel like I've explained it perfectly clearly, but I know from past experience that it just doesn't settle in that quickly. So I want you to ask the simple questions that you feel like you don't get. Like, that is a good question. So what is this here? So at a base level, x is a reference to h because we return this. But it's a bit more than that. It's not just a pointer into h. It's a pointer to h along with the context, along with the environment in which it was in which this happened. This is referring to a specific instance of h that was generated when f was called with the value of a being 1. I called this function. And when I called this function, the things inside of it took on a value. If I had set up some variables in here with certain values, maybe values based upon network information or whatever, that would all be encapsulated in its state. So I could use this, for example, to, let's say this held the state of every web request that came in. So let's say you want to generate methods for manipulating a web request. What you would do is you would call this function, pass a web request in, and then you would return back something that you could refer to as representing that web request. And now, but the thing representing the web request is really a function that you then call to parse it. You say, I want the host name from the URL. Okay. I want the arguments for the URL. I want you to give me an array of divided pieces of it. You can do all that. So at a base level, all it's doing is returning a reference to the function, but the function as instantiated in a specific execution environment. But the power of that is that that's effectively what an object is. An object is state combined with code. The state is the values of the variables that you can see inside of the object, and the code is the methods. But it's in some sense a more general pattern than what we would do in object oriented. It's more than just object orientation. This is really getting into functional programming. Objects in JavaScript are really implemented through functional programming patterns.
So we're halfway through the class.
Oh, thank you.
I will pause and let you all get a drink of water or whatever.
Missed a few minutes there, sorry.
So the only reason it's defined like that is because when node, since it's non-blocking, when that finishes, it has to call it back, right?
So there is the reason why you have this code pattern, and then there's what the code pattern actually is. So the reason why you have this deferred execution is because node never blocks. So it can't just wait till things are ready. You're going to pass it on and stuff. But the way this happens is through this creation dynamically of functions that are then passed around. So this is the file. So let's say we have an environment.
So
this is the file app.js. This is the global state of the file, of the JavaScript context when we're evaluating app.js. What symbols are defined in this context? Let's try. Well, I'll just start pointing to these things. So, what? Tell me a symbol that's defined in this context. So expresses. It's a var keyword there. What else? Route.
Yep.
And app. Anything else?
Look. Nope. Nothing else. That's it.
So functions aren't symbols then?
A symbol can refer to a function. A symbol is a name. A function is a value. Just like a number, just like a string. So this is a function value. This is the exact same thing as if I put in the number 5 here.
Or I put in quotes hello. It's a value.
Where is it getting the value? Like, where is the value though? Like, what value is function?
This is the value. I mean, it's a function. This right here that you're defining on the fly in this context.
So it basically performs what it needs at the instant it was called.
So is this being called? When I execute this app configure, are these lines being executed?
I would assume so.
Anyone?
Yes.
No.
Then what's the point of calling
it? Functions. When you define a function, you don't call the function.
No, I know, but your question was, does it actually, the code inside a function,
mm-hmm.
it's doing something, right?
Well, it will do something when it's called.
Yeah.
But when is it called?
You just said you can't call it.
You can't call it.
Yeah.
But configure will. It will be called at some later point.
And do we have to program that part, or does it take care of it?
Someone else is calling it. They ask for a function. We don't control when that function will be called. That's one key thing of thinking about Node, is you create functions, and you have no idea when they're being called. It's up. Your function is going to get called in some context, and it's got to figure out what the heck it's supposed to do.
So how do you retest it?
Well, it gets called for a reason. It doesn't just get, it's not like a random thing. Yeah, exactly. Oh. So what this is saying is that when the app is ready, so app is create server. When you do the create server, it's not, the server isn't necessarily running right then. When this code returns, goes to the next line, the classic model you have in your mind is that it's finished. It's done some work. It's created all the things necessary for listening to a network connection and stuff. That's not what's happening in Node at all. Once this line is finished, app is referring to a new HTTP server. And this HTTP server object has things like an open network connection, waiting for requests. But it's not necessarily done yet. And in fact, actually, it hasn't done anything yet. Because the only time that web server will actually start working is when it starts listening. This is the line that actually makes it get to work. And even that won't make it get to work. This just tells, this again, just gives it a port number and it gives it a function, a callback function. You don't know, and you do not control the order in which these functions will be called. What, all that happens, really, in going through this code is you start here, and okay, now this returns to you an object. Okay, now here, this you call a method that defines a function here. You call a method that, again, defines a function and a string. String, function. String, passing a function. Function. All these are, you're assigning these things, but nothing's actually happened. Things start to happen after this last line is called. But the order in which they're called, you're not sure. All you've done is, but you know these other functions will get called.
That's the thing. If you don't know the order, how does the thing know how you want things to look?
Well, you're using their code. They have taken care of the order in which things need to go. And you know, but the basic idea is before it can set up the web server, it has to know how to configure it, it has to know how to make it work. And so it will call all of this. But will it first set up the network connection socket, or will it start setting up these argument parameters? You don't know. You don't care. It's not your problem. And that's one of the key things about concurrent programming is don't worry about the order. It might happen in parallel, it might happen sequential, it might forward, you don't know. If there are reasons why something has to happen before the other thing, you enforce it. Otherwise, you don't know. And here, one of the things you definitely want to do is call listen last. Because if you don't have the other things defined before you call listen, it might start setting up the web server without having the appropriate argument set up. All these things are configurations. Use this way to hit the potty parser. Use this view engine. You're telling it all this stuff for how to set things up.
So it basically looks for the highest priority and it applies it first, and then it goes down the chain and whatnot.
It does some ordering. It does some ordering, and the other code knows what it needs to know first, but it's not your problem. If you're curious what order these things get executed in, how would you figure it out?
You test run it and check the request. They check the command log.
Yeah. The command? Oh, you mean the log of the outside of the web server?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, but you could add in little logging statements into each of these functions. Console.log. That will be called when this function is called. If you're curious when it gets called, you can add those in. But remember, in a sense, you don't care. That is the problem of the framework. It says, first, set up all the parameters, do it in something. Do all your configure calls. The order in which these things are applied to the object, you don't know, you don't care, it doesn't matter. And then, and then instantiate, and then actually tell it to start listening. Because that's really what the listen says, is it says to the server object, the app object, saying, I've given you all the configuration information I'm going to give you. You're ready to go. Start listening. Set things up. Because I could have had another 20 calls for, doing adding gets and posts and configure and setting up all kinds of state. And actually, later on, I could add in new things while it's running and potentially change it. But of course, once it's already listening, if I start changing it around, it depends on the semantics of the system. Changing the routing, that can potentially be okay. The configuration, like changing your view engine in the middle, that might confuse it a bit. Yes?
Is there only one listen for every JavaScript?
So what does listen do? What are we saying when we say listen?
Waiting for input.
So this is actually getting at some networking, which I just realized you might not understand. You'd covered network sockets, though, in 2401, didn't you?
You're binding the application to the port.
Yes, that's it's just binding the application to the port, 3010. So it means that now it's a TCP port. We're listening on that TCP port, waiting for connections. And so now, so does this actually mean the web server is going to do much? No, of course it's going to have to wait for an incoming request. But now it's listening. We're ready for business. So if you wanted to do more than one listen, it'd be basically listening on more than one port. Could do. That's like running multiple web servers. But you can. Yeah. You have a question?
No.
Okay.
Just one more thing. Yep. So basically when you say listen, is that basically compiling everything you wrote?
Compilation, so the JavaScript runtime is doing just-in-time compilation, which means that it's translating the code, the source code to machine code in the background as you go incrementally and potentially multiple times.
So things are generated once listen is called?
No, it's constantly being done.
Things are generated when they're needed.
Exactly. Just-in-time. Means as you need the code, it will be turned into machine code. It could, from a conceptual point of view, you can think of it being interpreted. That really is just reading each line of code and interpreting it and doing that. But it does things to make it faster so that it doesn't have to be parsing the code as it goes. And in fact, if it has to run the same code multiple times, like the body of a loop, it will translate it one time to machine code and then run the machine code multiple times instead of translating multiple times. Yes?
Okay, so when you run Node in the applications folder, what are the steps that it executes? So it goes through, I guess, does it open up the app.js file and read that first, or does it?
Well, what do you say? You say Node app.js. So that's the first. So now, having said that, when Node starts up, just like any execute, there's code that's run in native and in JavaScript to set up the environment. So there's always, like for example in C, there's code that runs before main. The code that runs before main is stuff to set up the C environment, like set up the stacks, set up standard input, standard output. Similarly, like all the code necessary for establishing the read eval print loop. If you have that enabled, like you're typing it at command line or just, setting up talking to doing basic I.O., that's all going to be set up. But to a first approximation, you can think that your program really starts at the first line of your app.js. All the stuff before that is to make the environment work. It just so happens that part of it's in C and part of it's in JavaScript. I think C++ actually in JavaScript.
And so you were talking about it before. I think he is asking the question when you look at some kind of file in machine language.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like,
a couple minutes here. So there's the what's really happening, and there's how you should think about it. Let's first talk about how you should think about it. You should think about it as if each line is being executed and evaluated as if you were typing it in at the prompt. The equivalent to saying node app.js is to just say node and type in each line of this file.
What,
and in fact, you can try that.
What if you were saying node app.js without having to listen?
What do you think?
Nothing would happen, right?
Exactly. You wouldn't have started the web server. Won't be listening for any requests. But if you're wondering what a file does, and it's the top level thing. Just start cutting and pasting. Just put one line after the other, and you can see it. And then if it's a read-all, you can see what the state of the system is. You can see when the interpreter comes up. And we start playing with the debugger. So logically, that is what's happening. Now, implementation-wise, it's a heck of a lot more complicated than that. But really, it's exactly the same as saying that your microprocessor executes one instruction after the other after the other. No modern microprocessor does that.
They execute instructions in parallel. They speculate. They go past, like, if you have an if statement, it executes both, like if you have an if clause and an else clause, it executes the if and the else at the same time. If you're talking about a loop, it executes the next iteration of the loop and the code after the loop at the same time, and then decides which way did we actually go, and then undoes the work that it did speculatively. I mean, it basically tries to do it as much as it can in parallel, and then throws away results as it goes, because it turns out it can do it faster if it doesn't have to pay attention to the dependencies.
Can you finish that quickly before
the end of class? Sorry, okay. Oh, yeah, sorry.
But, yeah, so it's a very complex model. I will try talking about that more as the class goes on, but for the purposes of now, just think of it as each line being evaluated as it goes. The rest is just performance increases. Now here, this is all your top-level stuff. So, when I call let's say, when I do this app configure, what is happening in this level? So app has a reference in it. App is an object, and one of its properties is configure. That's a property of it, because this is an object. So we'll put objects and servers here. So this is an object, this is an object, this is an object. This is an environment. So I call this, and now I define a function. So whenever I see a function, you should think conceptually that there's a new variable context that's just been created. And this thing is called... this is anonymous. It doesn't have a name. But it's a function context. What is defined in that function context?
An empty function with no name.
The function context is defined, but it took no arguments.
And it got no name.
It has no name, it has no arguments. Well, the name is never defined as part of this. But it has no arguments, and it doesn't call var. So it has no local variables. So this is this is empty. There's nothing here. But it is defined, and it could in principle have things assigned to it. But the reason why this, so in some sense, all the function here is doing is it's not allowing you to define it's not doing any sort of local variable things. There's nothing really private that's been put in there. But it's allowing you to do deferred execution. All you're doing here is saying, define this function, saying, this is a bunch of code, run it later. But the important thing here about this context is it refers to here. That's its most important purpose. Is that this could define all kinds of local variables, but if variables are not present here, it will look in this context. Even though where it will be called, it will be nested in a different context. It'll be off in, wherever it'll be in the file that configure is defined. It'll have its own lexical context. But this function that gets called, it'll be called with the file app.js context. And thus, it can access app. If it did not have this reference to it, app would have no meaning. So that's the purpose of these things, is to allow... Now, of course, logically, it's like, I put this in this file, so of course I should be able to see it. It's all in the same file. Well, this is the mechanism by which you do it. Because if you didn't have something like this, and it just sort of accessed whatever was accessible in the file that configure is being run in, it would try looking for app, and it would just do whatever, maybe app has an entirely different name in that file. Maybe we defined app globally, and it had some other name. That's the typical way you would do it there, but that's not this here. If it doesn't seem completely clear, that is okay. But hopefully, you at least know a little bit more about what you don't understand.
Yeah.
My goal is to get you to understand the stuff by the time of the test.
Like function encapsulation,
that's exactly.